Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Jose Siri, peacocking, showboating, admiring his long dong yesterday. Caught the ear of his manager, Krusty Dusty Baker. Said he should have done that. Said he should not have admired it. Eduardo Escobar took exception for the Mets. He talked to Maldi about it. We'll see if there's any sort of retaliation, whether it's today. First pitch, 3:05, wink, wink. Or when they play the two-game series next week in the Queens, when these two teams meet yet again. So we were talking about the retaliation, because I think you and I are on the same page, that there is part of baseball where there's going to be – somebody's going to get dotted. You're going to brush somebody back, whether it's the admiration, whether it's, you know, Josh Donaldson or whatever the case may be. There's always a time you're going to get a fastball up and in. You're going to get a fastball between the shoulder blades, between the numbers. Brendan, millennial of this show – he says that there should never be a point in time when retaliation with a pitch should come into play.
Yeah, I think assault is bad.
Assault.
Oh, what would it be? Man. What would happen?
You're the guy that wants something that happens in sports in a game to be a legal matter.
If the intention is to hurt somebody, it's assault. No, I don't want it to be a legal matter.
Hit versus hurt is a matter of interpretation.
How about when you set a hard screen? Is that assault?
Is your intention to hurt somebody?
Yeah, there's a big difference.
There's a big difference between something that happens within the context of a game that is the sport. I think arguing that throwing at somebody is the sport is silly. You're putting somebody on base because you're mad at them. That's not the sport.
Jeremy, if I hot foot you during a game and you get hurt in the process, are you going to arrest me?
I'm going to call Tony Busby.
You don't even know what that is.
I don't. I have no idea.
It's an old school baseball tactic where you put like matches at on your cleats and then you set them on fire.
That might be assault.
Are you kidding me? No, that's not okay.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, did you just do that too?
No, we didn't do that because that morphed into the bubblegum bubble on the top of a guy's visor or other fun pranks that happen in the dugout. That, I mean, I'm all about the fact that if a cross check in hockey or something like that,
yeah,
it's part of the game. It doesn't mean that it should, and if it goes haywire, that you should be arrested.
I don't think that either. I'm not saying you should go to jail for throwing at somebody. I mean. The difference between you used a hard screen as an example. If you set a hard screen
that's the perfect comp.
If you set a hard screen on somebody in real life, it might start a fight, but you wouldn't get in trouble for that. If you threw a baseball 95 miles an hour at somebody, you would get charged with assault. You don't think so. You think if I walked in, I can't throw 95 miles an hour.
If I saw somebody walking into work on the sidewalk out there and I went and like dove into him with my shoulder into his chin – That's a hard screen. That's probably assault there, too.
But now you're talking like flagrant fouls, which shouldn't be.
It's a move. It's a good hard screen. It's a good hard screen where you're sending a message.
I just don't think that they belong within the rule book
from the hard screen perspective.
Yeah, it's a foul. Just like hitting a batter, you award them first base.
If you're moving, but if you just kind of really firm up and drill someone with a hard screen – it's possible that you can do it within the context of the rule.
Not get called for a foul. Right. But usually if you're sending message with a hard screen, it's usually going to be an illegal
screen
going the
other way.
You're
probably going to put something extra behind it. Yeah.
So do you agree with Brendan? Do you think that throwing a fastball at somebody is assault?
I don't think there's anything wrong with setting a good screen that borders on illegal. If you're going into a screen to send a message, that also doesn't belong in basketball.
Oh, I disagree.
Yeah, see,
you got to send the messages.
Yeah, come on, man. So you're the guy that even if your whole team and your manager says, go out and hit the next guy, you're going to be the guy that either throws it behind him or throws it somewhere but close, but you ain't hitting him.
I just say no.
It's also the competitive nature of the game. Like you have to be the.
Do you realize what that does to a locker room too? Yeah. If they all come to you and say hit him and you say no,
that's alienates ridiculous. The player. Then alienate me.
You would be traded.
You'd DFA'd you'd be.
You'd be DFA'd.
No. I don't. If I was any good, that's not true.
To me,
you'd be traded.
Like also sending the message has a competitive advantage. I don't think as much in baseball as I do in basketball. But if you're the toughest team on the floor, there's a good chance you're probably the best team on the floor. If you have two equals, would you rather, like if two teams are the exact same in terms of prowess and talent, but one's just way tougher than the other team, give me the tougher team 10 times out of 10.
I do want to clarify.
This is a Detroit Pistons fan.
I know. This is weird from Detroit.
Well, so that's what I was going to kind of go here. I want to clarify something that's going to make me sound like a hypocrite.
I love Bill Laimbeer.
No, I enjoy this stuff, but that doesn't make it moral. Like, I enjoy that aspect of sports, but that doesn't make it okay.
I think the moral part becomes whenever it's a sport. Like, the fact that it is a sport.
I just think you're leaving sports when you're trying to harm people.
Okay. 713-780-ESPN. Do you think Brendan has a point here? 7837. Come on, Brendan, you're tripping. That's what's wrong with today's generation. No accountability. That's a great point.
It's fair.
If you're going to act that way, you need to be dotted in the back, or at least to understand that you might be.
Yeah,
it might not be coming, but you have to understand that it could potentially.
You can't accept your guy high-stepping, showing out, and embarrassing the other team, and then not accept, like, getting a fastball thrown at you.
The accountability is do it back when you beat me. If you can't beat me, then I'm going to celebrate.
Yeah, I can
see that,
too. And
by hitting me, you're actually helping my team beat you. That part's weird, too.
I mean, if it's 9-2 in the eighth inning, it's not really influencing the game. Yeah, it's not really influencing the game. Now, you're not, like, the good teams are the ones that don't, like, pick their spots. Like, the idiot teams are the ones, okay, top of the first inning, let's peg Altuve. Okay, well, that's stupid.
Right. They're the guys that, you know, get up by a couple and then wait for two outs in an inning, and then decide, hey, guess what? We got long memories. Remember that game a few games back when you guys were doing all that and thinking you were having a good time? Here comes the payback.
Who was it? Was it the Royals whenever Stressley did that?
That was the one with two outs in the ninth?
Yeah, that was Presley when he got ejected.
And he got thrown out.
He was ticked off that they even, like, warned him in that spot. 6535 is saying that I don't like baseball, but what happened last night was awesome. I like the showboating and sticking it to the other team. Dude, it's drama. It's controversy. We all want that in television. What kind of TV do you watch? If you're turning on the TV, you want to be entertained. You want to get some entertainment value out of it, and this adds to it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What do you think about this?
Hey, just want to say I'm not old. I'm not young. I'll be 40 in January, but I think this unwritten rule thing is some of the dumbest stuff it's ridiculous. It doesn't exist in any other sport. I mean, if you dunk on a guy, you scream at him, the other team has a chance to come back and dunk on you. You don't punch a guy.
Okay.
So if Siri looks at a home run, I mean, as long as it's not over the top, just completely disrespectful, like, come back tomorrow and hit a home run off our guy and look 2 seconds longer. I just have always thought the unwritten rule thing was just really, really silly in baseball, and it just needs to go away.
Gary, here's where I want to compare cross sport to you, in which I feel is a very similar situation, and it's not the hard screen. Because, look, there's a lot of people that think your way, and I think that the unwritten rules are somewhat silly, but I still like some of them as well, so it's kind of like a weird hybrid. The example that I would use is in basketball, whenever you score late in the game, you're up by 10 points, 5 seconds left, shot clock turned off, you have an open lane to the rim, you go dunk it, you go lay it up. How many times do we see another player come just completely wipe that dude out?
And
it's fine for me.
And
I'm okay with it.
And there's a talking to that goes with it, going, the game was decided. To the caller's point, look, if it's in the middle of a game, we always know that there's the, you know, go back at him. Like, if he got you, go back at it and try and get him. And John Morant, with his dunks, and then people, you know, Golden State and other teams were trying to dunk back on them. That's one thing in the course of a game when it's undecided. But the unwritten rule of basketball is, like, if the game's out of reach, dribble the shot clock out and take the turnover. Don't shoot a three, and don't go up and try and dunk on.
And if you do that, I'm okay if you get clothesline. I'm okay if you get Bill Laimbeer.
I agree with that.
I really am.
But it also is interesting, kind of, the to come out of that conversation and like, evaluate the leagues. Like, the NFL has gotten to the point where everything in the end zone and otherwise is pretty much acceptable now, from a quarterback sack to otherwise, with guys not getting all caught in their feelings.
Yep.
Basketball, same thing. With the very exception that you gave, if a guy dunks and really wants to show out, then the other team's cool with it because they know they still got a chance, and when they do it, they can keep it going by, you know, doing something to show out better. But in baseball, it seems like they're the worst of the sports, the big three, in terms of still being so old school, caught in their ways, that nothing that's kind of new school baseball and more fun police, they're the fun police more than any of the other two leagues.
Gasman says hitting someone with a ball because they celebrate slapping you in any way is Bush. What are we, 12? That would back up Brendan's point there. Don't use the baseball to hurl it at somebody else. Kevin Z saying, when Myers return, will this factor into Dusty keeping Chaz over Siri? So Jake Myers today is the final day of his rehab assignment. So he's going to play for Sugarland today. His rehab assignment's going to be over with. The Astros, because he still has options left, they could just assign him to AAA so he could continue playing with the Space Cowboys. But I was listening to Click today before the game. 3:05. People keep telling us it starts at 1:10. Wink, wink. We know it starts at 3:05. I don't know why you keep texting us 1:10. Wink, wink. But McTaggart was talking to James Click, and James Click was talking to the media, and they talked about Myers and his production in Sugarland hadn't been great. Like, his numbers aren't earth-shattering. But they said that they're looking more at the health than they are the offensive numbers. So it looks like Myers could be returning to the team maybe as soon as this week. Like, this week against the Yankees or the Mets. And what's interesting about it, too, like, I think Dusty has botched center field, not so much with the rotation. Like, I'm okay with the rotation, but you have three guys out there, Siri, who we're talking about, who hit the home run yesterday. Chaz McCormick, who's a better offensive player, not as good a defensive player as Siri. And then you have Mauricio Dubon, who's capable of playing center field as well. If you know you're going to go with a rotation between the three guys and you're kind of trying to mix and match different players, why didn't Dusty Baker, and I think we've seen Dusty Baker mishandle this lineup to cost his team runs. I think the perfect example is Kyle Tucker hitting fifth and not sixth when Yuli Gurriel was struggling. And we've seen Kyle Tucker take off a little bit now recently, and the Astros offense take an uptick as well. Why wouldn't you go with the hot hand? Like, if Jose Siri hits a home run the night before, why not stick Jose Siri back out there? And then if he goes 0-for-4 today, then you rotate it over to Chaz McCormick.
Well, it's the same way, Jeremy, that we always say that who's the first guy Dusty's going to consider sitting? It's going to be the guy that had the biggest night the night before. It's just a weird, quirky way that Dusty manages that he always takes the hottest guy and decides, hey, you're ripe for a day off now. You should probably sit down. And it makes zero sense because I get righty, lefty, and matchups and all those things, but I'm totally with you.
They're all righty.
If a guy's rolling and he had a big night the night before, there's no reason why he shouldn't be in the lineup the next day. And we've just gotten so used to and accustomed to Dusty being Dusty that we just kind of go, yeah, all right, well, whatever. Because otherwise, these moves would be scrutinized a lot more, as they should be.
Look, it's going to be a time. It was a timeshare anyways. Like Chaz getting starts, Siri getting starts in center field. It's been a share. It's been a timeshare between them. Why not do the timeshare with who had the hot bat? If Chaz McCormick's 1-for-3 with a walk, give him the start the next day. If he's 2-for-4, give him the start the next day. And then when he goes 0-for-4, okay, Siri, it's your turn. I'm going to ride you to see if you're hot. And if he goes 0-for-4, then you go to Dubon. The fact that Jose Siri hit a home run yesterday and you have a rotation, like this isn't a Ledesma Diaz starting for Jose Altuve to give Altuve a day off, right? Like if Diaz homers at second base because he's giving a day off to Jose Altuve is going to be in the lineup the next day. This is a rotation and a timeshare in center field. So ride the hot hand. I feel like Dusty Baker has cost the Astros some runs to an offense that hasn't been great at scoring runs by not riding the hot hand in center field.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, as we look at it, There should have been more of an exact. It's funny, with as much analytics as goes into this team, this isn't rocket science, right? You always ride the hot hand. We use the analogies across sports. If a guy's got it going, we call it a heat check, whatever. But, Rudy Tomjanovich will go back in the day and tell you, we're going to keep calling the same play if it's working until someone either proves they can stop it or he misses a shot. You ride that. And it's the same way you should be with your lineup card every day. Baseball's a game of streaks. And if you get a guy that's on his game that's hitting the ball really well, why sit him down?
Yeah, it is weird, but it looks like Jake Myers will be back soon for the Astros. 713-780.
That behooves the question. Who goes away when he comes
onto
the
roster?
Well,
I think right now it'd be J.J. Mattichevic.
Okay, that's fine.
But when Pena comes back, you got another decision
to make.
Yeah,
then you got a bigger one.
I think it's Chaz.
Ooh, boy. I think they'd look to trade him before they put him down.
I think they could trade him, but I think he might have a couple of weeks in Sugarland, too. All right, coming up next, NBA draft coming up tomorrow night. The Rockets will be changing the landscape, perhaps, of their organization. Should the Rockets still be embracing the suck? That when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jalen Green proved to be what, draft analysts and NBA front office personnel thought he could be. He's a dynamic scorer. And, he's going to lead the league in scoring before he's done. And he may do it multiple times. He's got that kind of ability. And he's still extraordinarily young.
High praise from Jay Billis about Jalen Green, Houston Rockets star. He joined the Wheelhouse yesterday. Check out the whole conversation, ESPN975.com. First off, do you agree with Billis there that Jalen Green at some point will lead the NBA in scoring? Will he win a scoring title?
I'm not sold yet. I don't know that I'd go that far. I'm not, and again, Rockets fans with the red Kool-Aid in the corners of your mouth, slow down. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player or even better than that. I'm just saying that you really have to be able to fill it up to be a scoring champion. AI, you know, Tracy McGrady, even LeBron James, who should have won it this year, those kind of guys. I don't know that Jalen Green is that guy yet. Not to say that there's all the potential to be there, but I got to see more, and I got to see him prove that. But I believe that he's going to be, you know, that centerpiece player for the Rockets, or one of them. So I'm not really dispelling it. I'm just saying, look, to be that good, I think I got to see a little bit more of Jalen Green.
I think he has the potential to be win a scoring title in the NBA, but there's still work to do to his game. Like, I mean, for a rookie, it's very tough to gauge what the rest of their career is going to look like. You're still seeing what they can project to and what they become. You see, like, years 2 through 4. I think year 2 is a huge year in the NBA for players, especially ones that were, you know, drafted in their teens, like Jalen Green. He has the potential to lead the league in scoring at some point. Now, the offensive scheme needs to probably be a little bit more sophisticated than it has been. I didn't think that they used Jalen Green in his most ideal spots last year. And look, Silas said after the season that they kind of dumbed it down because they had so many young players and they didn't want to put too much on their plate, which you can understand, but you do want to see some more sophistication going forward. I think Jalen Green, you know, at some point is going to be a really good player. I think he has the capability of winning a scoring title. I believe in buying into Jalen Green, because what other choice do you have, right?
Right.
Like, you've kind of given him the keys to the Rockets organization, and you're going to ride Jalen Green however far he takes you. And, of course, the addition of the number 3 pick, if the Rockets stay there, tomorrow night. So, Billis, that's a hot take, obviously, right? But I do see the possibility of Jalen Green getting there.
Right? Because
I think
what
a lot of
seen?
People have said it. Yeah. And he has the scoring capability. That's the best part of his game, I think.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, as you look at it and you put it all into perspective, the good news is you got the pick right, and you have a guy that has the potential to be something very special. How special? We don't know, and I'm still analyzing it personally, but I get where Billis and others could say that. It's just, for me, look, it's everything from shot selection, the ability to get certain shots off and to actually execute the shot and make it, from the step back to one-on-two, you know, three-pointer, to taking it to the basket, finishing around the basket through contact, making his free throws, you know, being able to develop to when you need it to get a mid-range kind of stop and pop. But he has the tools to get the job done. I'm just not going to anoint him to that level yet.
Yeah, I'm there too. He's got some more evolution to his game. And look, we've seen a lot of rookies that, you know, look like Jalen Green in his rookie year that look like they could potentially lead the league in scoring at some point and never materialize into that. What I like about Green is it seems like he has the work ethic on top of that, which should help him chase that scoring title. Although the Rockets, they'd rather get back to the postseason. Tillman Fertitta and Rafael Stone spoke to the media yesterday ahead of the NBA draft on Thursday. And I think Tillman Fertitta, Uncle Tillman, I like to call him, we're very tight. He talked kind of about the Rockets' philosophy, their plan. And Blankers, I think Tillman Fertitta is embracing the suck.
That you have to be, you have to look at, is this going to make me better 3 years from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, even 8 years from now? And that's what all the decisions are based on. This year, like we said, we want improvement in every area, but we're really looking out there and see the window of what's happening in the Western Conference. And
that, to me, is a big picture approach.
Did he finish by saying, don't judge us this year on wins and losses?
Like Casario did?
Because this was the Nick Casario speech from a basketball perspective.
Very much similar. Yeah. I mean, this is like, we want to improve. We want to develop our young talent, which you want to do. He talked about Steven Silas, too, and how he wants to see him continue to have that fire in his belly. But to me, it's very much a, look, we have a long-term view, and I think he's right with where this team is.
He's also taking it a step further. He fully realizes next year is the last year that he has a pick that matters in his own control.
Exactly.
So therefore, one more year of sucking is going to give you another top 5 pick that you're going to desperately need after Daryl gave away the farm. And he indicated that, if you listen to some of the other sound, when he said, gosh, guys, when I first bought the team, I didn't know what a first-round pick was. And I didn't know, you know, if we ever wanted one, had one, or needed one. But now that we had three of them, I really like this. And it's exciting and stuff, as if to take one final swat, you know, shot at Daryl Morey, as if to say, you don't value what most of the league still values, which are draft picks.
He talked about the Suns and how they've been built on through the draft. The Warriors, who have been built through the draft. The Celtics have been built through the draft.
Too, yeah.
So I like where that philosophy's at with Tillman Fertitta. Like, the Rockets aren't ready to contend next year. I don't want them to be a player for Kyrie Irving and you know, win 40-something games next season. Like, I'm to the point, though, because you have Jalen Green and because you're more than likely going to have Paolo Banchero, I don't need the Rockets to be the worst team in the NBA, especially with the lottery. Like, I don't care if they have the worst record in the NBA. I want them to win some games. I want them to show some progress. I want them to look like they're going to be maybe a player and a draft pick away from winning the year after that. But I still don't think this is a team that's ready for the playoffs or should be chasing the playoffs.
They played it the right way a year ago, right? Mm-hmm. Because they were one of the three worst records in the league. But they kept you interested and excited along the way because they were in the game for 3.5 quarters. They were competitive against teams. They had to be competitive again. I go back to that Laker game in L.A. that was a 2-point game at the end of the game, decided at the buzzer. Those are the kind of games, those are the kind of moral victories this team should be and the fan base should be okay with for one more year because they're showing you growth. They're showing you maturity. They're showing you the development of the talent, but they're also not showing enough that it's going to cost them in the final year that they have to take advantage of the draft and the pick that they control.
Yeah, before they lose all the draft picks that Morey traded away, they're not going to have their own for quite a while. So this looks like one more year because they have their pick after next season that if you are a lotto team, you're going to have a lotto pick. Now, they do have a lot of draft capital coming in, but that's from teams that are expected to be playoff-worthy teams. Although Brooklyn, keep an eye on Brooklyn. They could be crumbling a little bit, which the Rockets would love
But can I just say something real quick for all of you people that think Rafael Rosetta Stone is playing chess and we're all playing checkers because he could see all this coming and that's why he made the trade with the Nets? Please miss me with all of that because that is the biggest luck crapshoot in the history of mankind.
Well,
Harden wanted to go to the Nets. He wants to be a player's GM and made sure, because he wants to keep relations with James Wright, that he traded him where he wanted to go. He took what they were able to give him, and that was that. Now, if it pans out and works out because of circumstance that you get the better of the deal, so be it. But it's not like he's playing chess.
It was hopeful. It was hopeful that the Nets pick. But here's the thing with sports. It's like sports over time, things change quite a bit. So whenever those picks start to get 5-7 years down the road, it's like, okay, well, a lot changes in 5 to 7 years. So it's not so much I can guarantee you that Brooklyn's going to stink. There's just a decent chance that they will.
And there's still so many floating variables, though. Even if Kyrie leaves, that's money in their bank account, and they still have Kevin Durant and whatever they have in Ben Simmons. And they've got a roster with some guys that can play. So a lot they would have to subsequently then be open to trading Kevin Durant and move him too and do a complete rebuild. If you just keep Kevin Durant and get another piece or two, that's still a playoff team.
Sure, sure. But I'd rather have let's just assume that there's a 35% chance it could blow up. Like, because that is the math that they were probably looking at. Maybe even less than that. Let's just say 30%. Like, I'd rather have that 30% chance they blow up and own all of their draft capital than taking, like, some okay player back in a trade.
Okay, but let me give you a different scenario. Instead of dealing with that team with that scenario that they're loaded now but could not be later, would you still have that philosophy if there was another team involved that might be able to give you higher picks in the short term and or better players in the short term than dealing with that?
Well, with as far as it goes with the Harden trade, I didn't care about the players in return. I cared about the picks in return. So whenever I was trading Harden, I would want as good a picks as I could potentially get. That to me was what they should have done. Like, did they do that with Brooklyn? I don't know. I don't know what else was on the table. But I'd rather have Brooklyn's picks than like Spencer Dinwiddie. You know what I mean?
See, and that's where I'll push back because I thought all along the best deal for this team was going to be a deal with a package. Because at the end of the day, with the trades that you made, your centerpiece was Victor Oladipo. It turned out to be Kelly Olynyk.
Well, I think that the centerpiece was the picks.
But they were going to be in the 20s at the time, at least in the short term. Milwaukee's pick and Brooklyn's pick,
but I'd
still
rather have that than Olynyk and Oladipo.
But the original deal was Dinwiddie along with LeVert, along with the kid from Texas, Jared Allen, and still picks, and still get the picks involved. Yep. So you had three young starters and three draft picks for James Harden. That made more sense to me than then taking two of those guys and sending them for the rights to Victor Oladipo, which was never going to be a good fit here.
All those players to me are just guys, though. Like, I understand that they have roles in teams in the NBA. Like, the only player that you mentioned that I would have any that I wanted to keep in that little package was Jared Allen. But I also do value the cap space coming off the
books.
You saw
what Dinwiddie did in Dallas, but you know he might may or may not be like a locker room guy.
What is Dinwiddie going to do on this team, though? You know what I mean?
Like, LeVert is a guy that's above average NBA player, and he's very young.
Would you rather have LeVert or a late first?
LeVert.
Okay. 713-780-ESPN if you want to weigh in. 713-780-3776. 230, we'll look at another possible Rockets scenario coming up for tomorrow night's draft. Also, as Joel tries to distract me from what I'm trying to do, do the Texans really like Davis Mills, or are they just seeing it through? We discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Davis Mills, starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. Do you think that the Texans, here's a loaded question, do you think that the Texans really like Davis Mills, or do you think they're just seeing it through with a rookie quarterback that has shown some flashes of being all right as a rookie?
I mean, look, I think that they like what they have right now, which is a cheap alternative at quarterback at a time when they don't have to make a hard decision on quarterback. They like a guy that they drafted that they firmly believe has an upside that they're still trying to sort through that also gets them through another bridge year for this franchise without admitting it. Now they've almost bought even more, I don't want to say excuses, but they've bought another year of time while they evaluate a quarterback that quote unquote could be your quarterback of the future while doing exactly what the plan says for year two, which is one more year of not worried about wins so that you get the highest picks possible, but you're going to continue to build on what you did with the young players you've added and the players you're going to get in the trade. And I think that that's exactly where it should be. I don't think that anybody should be holding a gun to their head or we should be expecting that they should make definitive decisions, and they're in an ideal spot because of what Davis Mills has become to this point.
We were talking about with Stoots the other day. Of course, you can listen to him each and every day, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on the Wheelhouse. Very good at what they do. And we were talking to them about Davis Mills, and he was bringing up the point of where, like, because we have this, I guess, broad, vague threshold of what Davis Mills needs to show us this season in order for him to be the future of the Houston Texans. And it's a hard barometer to define because we talk about it all the time. We don't think it's, you know, X amount of yards. We don't think it's X amount of touchdowns versus X amount of interceptions. We don't think it's X completion percentage. You know, we view it as an eye test. Like, is he capable? You'll know it when you see it, as Fair Take Jake likes to say. Stoots said the other day that if he just shows growth, that they like him enough where if he just shows growth, that there's a scenario like this that is out there where if he just shows growth, then that's good enough. Like, he doesn't necessarily have to hit that baseline, that mythical baseline that we have for him. He just has to be better for the Houston Texans to commit to Davis Mills for more than just this season.
Don't believe it for a second. Look, I mean, you and I talked about it kind of in a different tweaked perspective of, hey, if he can move the ball up and down the field, he can matriculate the ball into scoring drives. He can do some things so the offense doesn't look anemic. That, you know, that's going to be the signs you need to say that he's capable. But if he's just capable, is that another term for game manager or below? You know, that doesn't preclude you from saying, look, he's a capable quarterback in this league. I'm going to go get another one because I got a top three pick and I got my choice of, like, you know, two of the better quarterbacks that might come out of the draft in the next couple of years that could actually be better than capable. So I don't agree with that simply because of the fact that I'm looking for that and a little bit more. If you're looking for the question that we had the other day of what's going to convince you you don't need to go get another quarterback, I don't know what there might, you know, what there really is that could tell me I'm not going to still look at and or pick another quarterback no matter how Davis Mills plays.
It would convince him, you know, where you now believe in him. Like, he would have to do something over the body of work, over the course of time, for you to flip the script to now where you believe in him. But potentially the Texans are already there. Maybe they already believe in him. Because
I don't know how you can be, though.
I'm right there with you. But I want to paint it from the picture in a second, paint the picture of what if they do. But first, like, I hear a lot of folks talk about the excuses, like, for Davis Mills, or, like, the actions, rather, for the Texans, you know, backing up Davis Mills. A lot of people are saying, well, look at the actions. The actions for the Texans are speaking louder than their words. They aren't drafting a quarterback. They kept Cooks. They kept Laramie Tunsil for Davis Mills. They didn't go out and trade for a Baker Mayfield. They didn't go out and trade for a Sam Darnold. I think all of that is hogwash. I don't think that those are actual real actions for the Houston Texans. Did they trade for Baker Mayfield or a veteran quarterback to bring in to compete with Davis Mills? No, they didn't. But why would you? Why would you bring in Mayfield? Why would you bring in Jacoby Brissett? Like, that makes absolutely zero sense. Well, they didn't draft a rookie quarterback. Well, no one did. Kenny right. Pickett went late first right. round. Malik Willis went to Tennessee very, very late. All the quarterbacks slid. So I don't believe the actions of the Texans have shown support for Davis Mills whatsoever. We haven't seen that action yet. Now, where the action could flip is what we're talking about here, where the Texans already do believe in him. And let's say they go 5-12, but he has shown, you know, a moderate level of development. Not great, doesn't reach our mythical bar, but a moderate rate of development where they think he's on the right path. And then they're sitting there at number 4. They don't draft Stroud. Now you got action. Now you're backing up what you're talking about there. Now, let's assume for a second that that's the way the Texans are looking at it, that Stoops is right. If he shows growth, then that's good enough. Would you be okay with that?
No, I wouldn't, because That's as stupid as saying that I'm going to take a guy that doesn't have any NFL experience and consider making him my head coach. Oh, never mind. Here's the thing. I don't think in the NFL you can afford to do something like that, because you can't commit to a guy until you've actually – you can see it on paper. You can see it when all your scouts. You can see it in practices. But until it translates to games consistently over time, week in, week out, not one good week, one bad week, not one good – one game where he makes the right reads and looks off – defensive backs, and another one where he absolutely craps the bed like the Dolphins game was, or some of the other games where he, you know, there were stinkers with the Texans quarterbacks. I think when you look at this and say, hey, it's going to take a lot more for me on the field than just saying in my heart of hearts, I believe, we believe there's enough there. Because even the Patriots, with the mold that these guys have followed that are in management and around this team, know that taking two quarterbacks and drafting another one when you have one is not out of the realm of possibilities. It's actually a regularity.
It is, but not so much in the first round. And the times that it does happen in the first round when they have a franchise quarterback, it usually leads to a lot of controversy. Like, the last time that I can remember one, that at least the one that jumps out to me, is Jordan Love for Green Bay when they already had Aaron Rodgers. It's like, what are you doing? You already have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and now you're trying to hire, like, to draft the heir apparent when Rodgers still has some good years left. Now, not comparing Mills to Rodgers whatsoever. But there are some, like, there's some positives to ride it out with Davis Mills and to see it through, right? Like, you need to get the franchise quarterback, but it doesn't have to be right away. Like, it took Josh Allen a while to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a guy who was in the first round that was drafted very early, who had a very, very high ceiling. Davis Mills, I think, has a higher ceiling than anybody believed whenever he got drafted in the third round. A lot of people were very critical of the first pick that Nick Caserio ever had as the GM of the Houston Texans, that he is overreacting to Deshaun Watson demanding a trade, that he reaches for a Davis Mills. That was a narrative that existed. Davis Mills has far surpassed that. Davis Mills is a top 40, I think at minimum, quarterback in the entire world right now, which is a win for Davis Mills. I think he can play much higher than that. I think he can get to the top 20. I think he could potentially get into the top 15. My hesitation with Davis Mills, I don't think he can get into the top 10. Mm-hmm. I hope he proves me wrong, because the benefits of having a rookie quarterback that does that is the fact that, okay, well, you drafted him in the third round, so there wasn't a whole lot of draft capital invested. That's obviously a huge return on an investment. You're making the money sign. Yep. Yeah, he's cheap. Cheaper. He's cheap labor right now. And in a salary cap league, whenever you have cheap labor, that means that you can distribute the rest of the cap money out to the rest of the team, and you'll basically have a higher ceiling for your overall team
as
well.
You can spend it in other areas because you don't have to blow it on a big quarterback.
And we know how much quarterbacks cost, right? And then on top of that, too, the draft capital is significant. Like, the money and the savings that you would save for a Davis Mills, that's great, because now you have more money to spread out to the rest of the team. You can bring in some veterans. I would say the same argument exists for the draft capital that you have. You have your first rounder. You have Cleveland's first rounder. If you were to draft a quarterback, and look, maybe you fall in love with a quarterback and still do it, but if you draft a quarterback, that means you're taken away from somewhere else. Like, the Texans just took Derek Stingley, so you feel pretty good about the cornerback position. They took Kenyon Green, number 15. You feel pretty good about the left guard position going forward, to where if you don't have to draft that quarterback, now that makes the rest, like the position group that you spend with your first rounders in 2022, you feel good about that positional group.
Right, and if there are position groups still on this roster, which there are, that are still completely depleted or undermanned compared to the rest of the league, you'd like to better those. So I get it. If you don't take a quarterback, then you can actually improve in a different area of your team and make it better quicker. But I don't think that you're there. No matter what Davis Mills does, I don't have the feeling, and he hasn't shown me anything on the field that says franchise quarterback. And I guess if you want to use the way you kind of laid it out there, I don't see top 10 either. I don't see top 10. I can see top 15 maybe, like depending on if he's taken the next step after he took a step this last year. If he takes another step, now I see him in the top 15-ish.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is our opinion now. We didn't think we would be having this conversation about Davis Mills a year ago.
Davis Mills and I went back and forth on it.
On June 22nd last year, we weren't even working together. Like, think back a year.
A full year.
365 days ago, is Davis Mills, a third rounder out of Stanford behind Tyrod Taylor. To think that 365 days later, we'd be having a conversation if Davis Mills could be a top 15 quarterback.
Or be the starting quarterback of the Texans, period.
They would have thought we were crazy. Yeah. They would have said, get rid of these two jokers. What are they, shock jocks? So, like, we understand that 365 days from right now, Davis Mills could again fool us. He could again prove us wrong and could play himself into that
level.
But I
think if you're the Texans, you're foolish. It's fool's gold. If you think after a decent year that he is your end-all, be-all quarterback of the future, because now you could be, as much as, to your point, you could be benefiting other areas of the team if you don't draft a quarterback, you could also be selling it short for the progress long-term by doing that and avoiding taking a second quarterback, because I've said to you all along, competition is great. It brings out the best in players, and you maybe see more in one that you didn't see before, or you get something out of someone that you wouldn't have seen if you didn't draft him, and then you have the other guy which you either can move on to get something else for, or you've got a great backup plan and insurance no matter what you do with the starting quarterback.
When we come back, I want to push back on the competition part, kind of, and also the other part of that conversation that you talked about with where Davis Mills is at. Also, when we return, the top new quarterback receiver duos in the NFL. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
6133 just texted me, or texted us, at 713-780-3776, our HRMP listener line. It says, Breggy Baum and a Yordong went back-to-back in the bottom of the first? He must be talking about batting practice over at Minute Maid Park.
Are they replaying last night's game or something?
Could be replaying on AT&T Sportsnet. Of course, game two of the series starts at 3:05. Between the Astros,
Lamont
and the Mets.
Told us they normally crap the bet after a big offensive performance. He was betting on the Mets. I just got a feeling I'd bet on the Stros early to get a crooked number and really kind of open up a gap in terms of the spread.
Underrated thing: crooked numbers for your hometown team.
Yeah.
In baseball, crooked numbers are very good. You know what's an interesting stat in baseball? As I go stat nerd for just 1 second.
Not just 1 second. It's kind of a theme.
Do you know over half the time in baseball, Major League Baseball, that the winning team scores more runs in one inning than the losing team does the entire game?
I thought you were going to pull a Clyde Drexler on me.
Club Baby Seals?
No. Keys to the game, Clyde? Well, obviously, keys to the game with Clyde would be that you score more points than your opponent.
Mark Jackson said that during the finals the other day. What do they need to do to be better? Well, it all comes down to execution. Thank you, Mark Jackson. I can see why they fired you and hired Steve Kerr to lead their dynasty.
The keys to the game were always, Clyde, what are your keys to the game? Well, I think, if they get the offense rolling to score more points than your opponent, that'll do it every time.
Thank you, Clyde.
I did not know
Happy birthday, Mr. Drexler.
Yes, today. By the way. That's why he wore 22 his whole career.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Okay, what?
June 22nd is his birthday, and he wore 22 his whole career.
I thought you meant that he always thought he was 22 years
no.
old.
No. But sometimes, but no.
713-780-ESPN. Happy birthday to a Houston legend. 713-780-3776. We're talking about Davis Mills. Get to one of the things I wanted to push back with you on, and one of the things I actually agreed on. But first, also into the HRMP listener line, somebody texting in saying that Davis Mills can have the same jump that Josh Allen did from year one to year two. Look, Josh Allen as a rookie was not very good, if we're being completely honest. Threw for 2,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, 12 picks. And then his second year is when you're like, okay, he's starting to prove us wrong a little bit. He's looking really good. And then 2020 is when he really, really took off. So, like, I don't think Davis Mills has the upside of Josh Allen. That's hot take there. Hot take there, Mr. Branham. But I do think it is fair for Davis Mills to develop and progress a lot more than what he showed in his rookie season, in year two and in year three.
Yeah, I think it's unfair to compare him to Josh Allen. He doesn't run and have the legs of Josh Allen. He doesn't have the physical size and strength of Josh Allen. But I think that he has the intelligence and still has a skill set where he can excel in this league. It's just we're trying to evaluate to what level can he get to and how long is it going to take him if he does get from point A to point whatever you need to see so that he is looked at as your franchise quarterback. And I don't think that's a two-year process. I agree with you there. I don't think that no matter what we see this year, that's why I've said all along, I don't believe there's anything he can do that's gonna preclude me from going and looking at another quarterback at the end of this year, because I might see more progress in Davis Mills. But no matter what I see, it's not going to tell me he's going to be the next Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or, you know, you name your top 5 to 10 quarterback in this league. And I'll tell you, I don't think he's there yet. But because he made the jump that he made from when we saw him the first time to the second go-round last season, you have hope that there's more jumps in him that will give you more hope and more belief that he is a true quarterback in this league. I'm just not there yet.
How many years do you think a quarterback needs, though, to get, like, the true essence of his development?
I think it's three.
See, I think it's, like, three minimum. Like, to me, it's almost like the life of their rookie contract.
You think about it. Aikman took it in the shorts, and they didn't win a game his first year, and he just got killed. Yep. The second year, they gave him a little bit more resources around him, and he started to settle down. But we still didn't see what he could truly be because he was just feeling comfortable. And then after a year of feeling more comfortable, then he finally figured out, this is going to be my team. I can do this. And then he kind of, you know, they took the reins off. He just went nuts.
I mean, Steve McNair is like going a little old school here, but going back Houston theme, McNair was behind Chandler at the quarterback position. Like, he didn't even play as a rookie. They kind of redshirted him in his first year, and then he really took off later on, like year 4 or 5, whenever they moved to Tennessee. Aaron Rodgers didn't even play for how long?
Three plus minimum he sat behind Favre.
And he's one of the best quarterbacks in our generation, right? So, like, it is interesting because I think we're on the same page on, like, how long it takes for a quarterback to develop and come close to their prime, come close to their peak. It usually takes 3, 4, 5 seasons before you get a real idea of what a quarterback's going to be in the NFL. So using that as the baseline and the guide here, like, are the Texans selling Davis Mills short if he's pretty good but not great as a sophomore quarterback in the NFL? Because now it's like, okay, well, he's pretty good there in the second season. Maybe he's going to be really good in his third season.
But you're not selling him short, Jeremy, because of the fact that no matter who you take, they're on a 3-year plan too.
Yeah.
So you can take that quarterback and see what you got there too, but it doesn't take away from Davis Mills because now you got two of them, and one guy's already is going into that third year, and the other guy's 3 years away.
Yeah.
So you're not actually screwing up either timetable in the short term.
So you like the battle there.
I do.
You like the battle there. And that's the thing that I wanted to push back on was the competition. I don't hate the competition in that scenario that you just painted. The competition that I hate would be if you brought in Baker Mayfield, would be if you brought in Jimmy Garoppolo. Because what are you really trying to achieve if you're the Houston Texans, especially Baker Mayfield, who's in the last year of his deal? Like, you're just going to showcase Baker Mayfield, let him play really well, and if he does okay, now you're either going to either have to commit to Baker Mayfield or you're going to have to let Baker Mayfield walk, who you just let play for 17 games. So I actually agree with the Houston Texans, unique to this offseason, that they didn't bring in competition for Davis Mills. Look, I love Kyle Allen. Go Cougs. Kyle Allen is not competition for Davis Mills. We all know that. I like that they didn't draft a quarterback, a project quarterback in the third or fourth round, because you're not in love with any of those guys. None of those guys are long-term answers for the Houston Texans. Davis Mills could potentially be. We don't think he is, but we think he has the chance. Whereas Baker Mayfield doesn't. Whereas Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't. Whereas Desmond Ridder, wherever you're drafting him, doesn't. So where I disagree with the competition, that I do like if you draft a quarterback in the first round next year, yeah, and you go into next camp with the competition between Mills and whoever you draft as a rookie quarterback that you love, that you like, that can be part of the future plans, I think the Texans did it right this season, giving Davis Mills zero competition.
No, and I would agree with that too. I agree with competition if it is through the draft, because we just got done talking about, you have two guys on separate paths and timetables, but you're not paying a whole lot of extra for the quarterback you drafted in the first round.
Right.
And you've got that window of time to evaluate what you have. It's a totally different story if you bring in a veteran quarterback, because if you bring in a veteran quarterback who thinks they're going to start, who has started elsewhere and still has plenty left in the tank, now you could absolutely deter,
yep,
the development of Davis Mills.
Yep.
You could almost scare him off, and you could suddenly be a detriment to the development that you were hoping to see, and now you've screwed the whole thing up.
See, I think that's where the competition, I'm not a fan of it. Whenever you're a team that does not have playoff aspirations, because, yeah, Lovie Smith wants to win, and Cal McNair was talking the other day and saying, oh, we think we can win as soon as this season. Cal McNair is Cal McNair. Cool Cat Cal. We love him. I love him.
You love him.
But, you know, as far as football minds and being able to project what the NFL is going to be, I don't think we give him a whole lot of stock there, right? We don't give him a whole lot of credibility when it comes to that. But I do like how they've handled the quarterback position this season. Bring in a quarterback, you know, who can, you know, in Kyle Allen, that can be all right in case Davis Mills gets hurt, that can help him in the quarterback room. But you let Davis Mills know, hey, this is your team. Go show us. Because this year is all about collecting the information. It's about collecting intel and data on what Davis Mills can be. So, hey, don't worry about a distraction of a Jimmy G. Because remember, we saw reports of that in the season. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jimmy G is heading to Houston. Why?
The bigger thing is that there's two different kinds of veterans. One is a placeholder.
Yeah.
Because they're already – they're just – all they're there is – and it's like when Tyrod Taylor was in Cleveland and Baker was drafted, right? He was the show the ropes, big brother, placeholder until Baker's ready to take over guy, and that was understood. There's a difference if you bring in a guy that's been there and been the man, and now suddenly you're giving him a clean start somewhere else. But if you're expecting him to go, but I'm going to be the number two and I'm going to be quiet about it, and I'm just going to – it's like Cam Newton going somewhere else after being the starter in Carolina.
Right.
Even if it's Mac Jones, Cam might tell the media, oh, I'm just here to be happy to be here and help Cam, you know, Mac and Cheese out. But at the end of the day, when the lights go off on the cameras, Cam's going, I'm going to beat your ass. This is my job and I'm going to take it. And I'm going to, because I've been there and done that before. You don't want that with a young quarterback.
And there's a reason they released Cam Newton.
Exactly what I was leading towards.
Cam Newton was easily the second best quarterback in New England.
Maybe the third at that point in his career.
Right. But, I don't know. But the reason they got rid of Cam was not so much because he was a worse backup quarterback. It was because of the distraction.
Right.
Like, you don't want that to be something that a rookie quarterback is worrying about.
Especially if you've got the complete recipe for disaster, which is an outspoken veteran guy that's not going to start, because now he's not going to just sit there and stew on it.
Yep.
He's going to spew it to everybody.
And I think it's similar to the Houston Texans now. We're like, you're handing the keys to Davis Mills. Don't let there be a distraction there. Don't let there be a looming question. Oh, well, you know, Jimmy G's right there. Baker's right there. I like that the quarterbacks didn't bring in any competition for Davis Mills. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, coming up next, in case we missed it, all the stories that we just haven't been able to get to. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you all about New Breaks, because of the fact that New Breaks does what a lot of people didn't think could be done. It saves you time and saves you money while you get your brakes done the right way the first time. That means instead of going to a brake shop, waiting in a waiting room, being at the mercy of a mechanic, you can actually get your brakes done while you still do whatever you do during the course of the day. You want it done at the house while you're doing honeydews or cutting the lawn or doing other things, even watching a game. Well, they come to you and in your driveway or in your garage, they're fixing your brakes while you do what you got to get done. If you want it done at work, like I did here at the station, we did a show. They came to the parking garage. They fixed my brakes in 40 minutes, and it was painless, and it saved me time, and it also saved money along the way. The bullet points you need to know are, if you mention ESPN 97.5, you're going to save 10%. But more so than that, You're going to save time because they're going to come to you with a skilled technician that only does brakes, doesn't try to upsell you on anything else, because the only thing he is there to do is brakes. The prices are competitive with any brake shop in town. They use the same parts as any brake shop in town. And because they come to you to do what they do, you save the time that you would be wasting if you had to go and sit and wait while your car was repaired. They take care of you every step of the way. Go to newbrakes.com. That's NUbrakes.com. And see what all my listeners have been talking about ever since they heard me talk about it. And they went to New Brakes too. They come to you, do what they do, and do a great job so you can tell others it's the way they should do their brakes too. Check them out today. NewBrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5.